Hey, y'all. Thanks for tuning into the Duckett Russell Family Hour. I'm excited to announce the return of a friend of mine to the podcast, a sweet little pig named Teacup Pig, who used to make appearances in the Lavender Hour. He just got out of jail and needed some work, so I've decided to pay him to be a correspondent from the show and do remote interviews for me from time to time. And for his first interview, we sent him off to the Republican National Convention, and this is the interview he sent back, and it's pretty awesome. So everybody, please welcome to the Duckett Russell Family Hour the wonderful, adorable cutie, the Teacup Pig.
One of them bit my leg. One of them ran away. I long for power. I long for blood. We feed on fear. We feed on fear.
Well, you should try the buffets. They're pretty good. As a member of a super advanced shape-shifting reptilian species that runs the entire planet, can you tell us what you've got in store for us for the next 4 years?
We are going to show you that your planet is a Garden of Eden, and that there is enough food and resources for everyone, and that love is the only way.
That sounds swell! I can't wait for that!
I gotcha. It was a joke. We will continue to convince you that your petty ideologies and antiquated religions are more important than human life. We will instigate a false flag nuclear attack in one of your major cities, causing a police state to fall over your country, and many of you will be permanently moved to FEMA camps, where you will be executed under martial law, and Miley Cyrus will shave her head.
Oh no, Miley Cyrus is gonna shave her head? Please tell me you're joking! Come on, no way!
Yes! I must go now. I have an important speech to give tonight.
Well, thanks so much for your time, and thanks so much for helping us run our little planet, because we sure need it with all this crazy stuff going on with our celebrities. This is the Teacup Pig reporting live from the Republican National Convention. Back to you, Dungan.
Thanks, Teacup Pig. And a big thank you to our sponsor, Sure Design T-Shirts. Sure Design T-Shirts is a wonderful company based in Thailand, but they didn't always exist in Thailand. Once they existed in heaven. They were the only T-shirt company in heaven, and they made T-shirts that were so soft and luxurious that God got jealous, because God couldn't make T-shirts that were that soft. And so, being a little baby and having a temper tantrum, God threw the company and all of its employees out of heaven and down to earth, where they formed a t-shirt company on earth. They were like, fuck you, God, we can make a t-shirt company here. And they make a lot of other stuff too, but their specialty is t-shirts. They make some amazing shirts. They also make a variety of other fantastic clothing items with incredible designs on them. These designs are actually extracted from when you poison a virgin with a type of poison called scopolamine, the virgin will mutter some incredible things, and quite often these things that the virgin mutters or screams can be drawn. And they have some amazing artists there, who spider artists who paint what the dying virgins mutter in blood on incredible canvases. These canvases are scanned, and these are the designs that they use for these amazing t-shirts. Go check them out at suredesigntshirts.com. They really do make some of the most amazing shirts. People come to my shows wearing these shirts, and I'll sometimes rip the shirts off of their bodies and keep them for myself. So why not go to suredesigntshirts.com, buy one of their amazing t-shirts, wear them to my shows, wear them to your yoga studios, wear them to your funerals, wear them to your weddings, wear them anywhere that human beings have optic nerves and want to fuck. So try it out. SureDesignT-Shirts.com. Go there. If you enter my name, you will get 10% off. We're also sponsored by the amazing company Audible.com. Audible is the largest distributor of audiobooks in the known universe, and their audiobooks are all narrated by brilliant voiceover actors. I'm addicted to Audible. I have a monthly membership. They give me credits every month to download free audiobooks, but I can't even keep up with the credits because the books last a long time, and I only listen to the books when I'm on the treadmill. So finishing a book takes about 2 years for me because I only run for 10 minutes at a time on a treadmill because that's where I'm at in my life right now. But I might make it 20 or even 30 minutes soon. Regardless, go there, go to audible.com. They have a variety of amazing books. I'm listening to the Dark Tower series right now. I'm also listening to a little Flannery O'Connor. They have her short stories that you can listen to. And there's also a lot of other amazing books. They're books that have just been released. If you don't believe me, go to audible.com and check it out. And if you want to get a free audiobook, you can go to audibletrial.com/family hour and you can sign up for a trial membership and download one free audiobook. You can cancel the membership if you're not interested in more audiobooks, but you'll get addicted like I am and you won't want to cancel it. And if you do, no skin off my back. Go ahead and do it, you jerk. Also, I want to thank everybody who has donated to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, either through blasting green energy through the PayPal account located at DuncanTrussell.com, or by sending me awesome books and gifts to the P.O. Box, or by joining the forum and joining the book club, or by buying one of our amazing posters or T-shirts that are available at the Duncan Trussell Family Hour shop. Go check it out. There's still some T-shirts left. We're actually selling out of a bunch of shirts. We're about to put in a new order for shirts, and we're about to get a new batch of posters in the shop. We just had an amazing poster contest, and a bunch of amazing artists submitted some great designs. We picked three. Those are going to go on sale soon at DuncanTrussell.com. So go to DuncanTrussell.com, check out the shop, buy an audiobook, donate if you feel like it. These are all ways that you can support this podcast, which I hope you love and enjoy and care for more than anything else on the planet, or at least more than, I don't know, lattes or socks. Maybe not more than socks. Socks are so important. We've got a great podcast for you today. This is, in fact, a mega super juggernaut of a podcast. This is a podcast that is going to send the fist of God smashing into your frontal lobe and could lead to you having a joy seizure. So if you listen to this and you have a frontal lobe, you are warned. Now, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, the amazing Bert Kreischer, a.k.a. The Machine. You can see him on the Travel Channel's show, Bert the Conqueror, and the amazing Joey Diaz, a.k.a. Mad Flavor. Check him out on The Longest Yard and check him out on his podcast, Beauty and the Beast, that he hosts with Felicia Michaels. Now, everybody, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, the incredible Bert Kreischer and Joey Diaz. Kreischer and Joey Coco Diaz. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Okay. I forget which one you did where you you forgot to hit record for the first 30 minutes.
Ugh.
And then you continue. But he goes, sorry about that, people. We didn't hit record. But then they started their conversation from where they left off.
That was Honey Honey.
Yeah. And I was like, what the fuck?
That was fucking Honey Honey. I was too taken with him. I couldn't concentrate. I fucked up the thing. It's hard, man. Because, you know, sometimes you get stoned when you do these things and you don't. There's aspects of that that cause technical difficulties.
I never think of, like, I was saying, I don't know, Joe, we don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, but Joey was telling me, when we were having coffee, he was telling me horror stories of smoking too much weed or eating too much weed.
Yeah, it's sometimes an edible will get you, man. You don't even know it. You don't even see it fucking coming sometimes. So you got to be really careful. I love when I have an accident. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you ever go to do a bong, you got to go to a meeting. And you're like, you know what, man, I got to get on the 405. Let me just do a bong hit. And you do one, but it's big, and you don't kill the whole thing, and then you light it again. And all of a sudden, you get in the car, and at the first light, you realize, I'm fucking stoned, dog. I got a little bit too fucking high, and I got to sit on the 405. Might as well cancel this fucking meeting. Sometimes I go to church on Sundays, I get fucking wrecked. And I go in at 7:30 mass, fucking stoned. And when you walk in from outside, you walk into the heat, and you see a crucifix and Jesus getting beat up. It's just too much. You're like, this is just too much. I overdid it. I did a bong hit too much.
I like that you call it having an accident.
I said, it is an accident by mistake. I got high by mistake. Nobody ever did that shit. Sometimes you get high, but sometimes you get stoned by mistake. The difference between being high and a little bit stoned, sometimes you get fucking stoned and you don't realize it till you're sitting and your body goes away from you, like your mind, all of a sudden you focus back and you're like, oh fuck, this might be a problem. This might be a problem. I gotta talk to people.
Maybe the funniest story I've ever heard is Yoshi eating like seven slices of Joey's banana bread and not knowing there was marijuana in them.
Until afterward. See, I like doing that to people. Like Yoshi. When Yoshi, after he ate like four or five of them, and he says to me, how strong is it, Joey? What am I going to say? This is the shit Kennedy ate? No, I'm going to say no. It's okay. You know, I don't want to scare. It's like when the doctor told me the needle's going to hurt. It goes into your psyche.
Yeah.
So I just try to take the pain from him by saying, you know, Duncan knows. I'll give you some strong shit. I gave Duncan bread strips one time.
Almost put me in the hospital.
And told him to take fucking two of them. You know, I'm one of those guys.
No, you're one of those guys where I take your dose and I cut it into fourths.
Yeah.
The trick doesn't work anymore. Whatever he says, you take a fourth of that. Yeah. Or you're fucked. No matter what the thing is. Yeah.
Ari Shaffir gave me a breast strip one time. I was talking about having anxiety flying, and Ari goes, just here, take this. And he gives me a breast strip, and he goes, next time you fly, take this. And I was like, what is it? And he goes, it's marijuana. And I'm like, first of all, I can't have anything edible. I can't have marijuana in my house, but I definitely can't have anything edible in my house because my kids.
Right.
Like, God forbid my kid go, I fucking love banana bread.
But it's a breast strip and you put it in your wallet.
Yeah. But I was like, I'm not fucking, I can't even take it because I can't imagine the anxiety I'd have getting on a fucking plane that high. I'd fucking lose my mind.
You just fall asleep.
You think so? Or do you think I'd sit there like Yoshi in the parking lot at the Brea Improv for 9 hours?
Oh, yeah. You just fall asleep. Listen to Joey Diaz. You just fall asleep.
You try to fall asleep.
That's like saying you fall asleep when you've been tied to the back of a carriage that the Grim Reaper's driving. Oh, just fall asleep when you're getting dragged through a graveyard of memories by the Grim Reaper on a fucking plane. Dude, I took an edible and flew to fucking to Europe. On an edible.
Are you fucking kidding me?
And so this is what happens. So right when it starts coming on, it's dark. It's coming on. All of a sudden, the plane hits turbulence, right? People have gone to sleep in the plane. I'm wide awake. It's very comfortable on a plane. Everything, you're getting taken care of. Everything, you're comfortable.
Yeah.
You can get drinks. It seems like a great place. But then we start hitting turbulence, right? And not just a little bit of turbulence, like hardcore fucking turbulence. And this is Air France. And Air France once crashed into the ocean.
Yes, I remember that.
So I'm sitting on this fucking plane hitting turbulence. And all of a sudden there's like a bing. And you hear the stewardess in a French accent say, mothers, please hold your babies.
That's where the translation's lost.
No. She's saying the turbulence is so bad.
Mothers, please hold your babies.
Yeah, that's to me is like planes crashing. The plane's crashing. That's saying the plane's crashing. So I'm just sitting there clinging to the fucking seat. The stewardesses look nervous. You ever been on a plane when the stewardesses start looking nervous? Fuck, dude. It was horrific. It was like, and then the captain came on and said, we're going to be hitting this turbulence for the next 3 hours. So it was 3 hours of the most extreme turbulence I've ever been in. It sucked.
I flew out of Chicago one morning, about 6 in the morning. It was a Chicago flight into Burbank. I switched in Vegas. I always liked to fly into Burbank. They had a flight, you know. So that morning I had no weed. I get up on a Sunday, whatever, it's early. And as I get to the airport to get my ID, as I pull the ID out, a breath strip falls out. But what you have to be careful with the breath strips is when it gets hot, they stick together.
Yes.
I tell you about this. I took it, and as I put it in my mouth, I felt the thickness of it. But I'm a gorilla. I had a sandwich at the airport, you know, yeah. One of those nice Chicago sandwiches, and I got on the plane. It's no problem. This is in the days when Southwest and the front and the back had those seats that you face somebody. Do you remember those seats? Anybody ever go on there, right? When you face somebody, I get on there and I get on the front because I know it's I get in the back because it's you unload in Burbank. The plane ride to Vegas was okay. It was Vegas to Burbank. 40 minutes outside of Burbank, there's always turbulence.
Yeah,
big time turbulence, and it hit me on one of those breath strips. It all hit at the same time, the turbulence and the breath strip. And for some reason, I started sweating profusely. This is when I was 400 pounds. Sweating, cocaine sweat. The armpit thing is yellow, right? And I'm sweating, and I'm starting to get dizzy, and I'm fucking high. And I got three Republicans next in front of me, like three white. They could only be Republicans. They were nigger haters. They were Republicans, right? They're sitting across from me. And they're like from Iowa. They're nice ladies. They're going to Burbank to see Mickey Mouse. Here's this 400-pound guy in front of him, sweating like a motherfucker. That's coming out of my armpits. Finally, the stewardess is like, "Are you okay? I'll bring you water." I go, "Bring a lot of water, bitch." I start taking my hooded sweatshirt off. I take the fucking shirt I got off, and all of a sudden I got like a guinea t-shirt, like a wife beater, and it's drenched. I said, "Fuck it." I take the wife beater off, and these three Republican ladies are looking at me like it's the end of the world. Yeah. My fat stomach is out. I got a pimple on my tit. The sweat is dripping from under your fat titties on your stomach. You ever been with a fat guy?
Yes.
And they're looking at me in shock. Like, if they could have jumped off the fucking plane, they would, dog. It was horrible. That plane landed, and those women fucking were going to go right back. They're like, "Does this plane go back to Iowa? We ain't even getting on. Fuck the luggage. Sell it to American Airlines in Miami." I seen the NCSNBC. I mean, you have bad experiences with it, but when you're a comic, nothing's a bad experience.
Right.
It's a laugh. Right. I laugh when that's like as I'm dying right there. It's like I was telling him I got sick in San Francisco, and as I was puking, a little turd came out of my ass, just a little one, unmolested. You know when they come out, they don't even leave nothing, no like shit around you. It just comes right out. Like you ate a bunch of apples the night before. It pops out, bloop, and it hit the floor. And as I'm barfing, looking at myself in the mirror, puking, holding myself up. I'm a comic. I had to turn around and look at the piece of shit. Just to fucking giggle. And I remember looking at myself, bleh, and giggling. Like, that's what we do.
Yeah.
That's the best thing about being a comic.
Yeah.
That there's never really a bad story. You know, when I was younger, I did heavy-duty drugs. Like fucking THC Crystal. THC Crystal was something in the 70s. In the 70s and 60s, they had THC pills. I used to do THC Crystal. And I never knew what the thing was for it. And then a couple weeks ago, I got a Playboy from 1981. It was a Hollywood Henderson interview. Anybody remember Hollywood Henderson?
Wait.
He was a Dallas Cowboy that got fired for, waving his finger up in front of Tom Landry. But he was an amazing football player. I got to give you the article, Duncan.
Please.
Opening paragraph. It was my rookie season at Dallas Cowboy camp in Thousand Oaks, California. In my bag, I had a gram of blow, three fucking hits of THC, and a joint. This is Hollywood Henderson's rookie year.
Jesus.
This guy was crazy.
That's a great way to start a fucking article.
Oh, my God. You got to see it.
I'll read the book with just that.
I don't know. He hit the lottery. He hit the lottery in Dallas. He was a coke fiend.
Yeah.
And Too Tall Jones for his birthday in the article. It's brilliant. It talks about gave him four chicks for his birthday, a black, a white, a redhead, and a Chinese. But here's what gets better. When he got his big signing bonus in like 74, he talks about 75. He talks about saying, "Fuck it, I was from Texas and I was a nigga. I wanted to run like a nigga. So I went to L.A. and he goes, "I got the baddest motherfucking hotel room and rented a limo. And the Pointer Sisters would pick me up at night, free basing in the limo. And they would pick me up and we'd head over to the Comedy Store to pick up Richard Pryor." I mean, fucking amazing.
Up.
Amazing. But that THC crystal was a powder that they put the stems in and it boiled in some chemical and whatever stuck to the sides, you scrape it and you snort that. And it would take you from 0 to 60 quicker than heroin. I mean, it was like,
really?
And all of a sudden you were like, a buddy of mine drowned on it. He's dead. He jumped in the water and it went into shock. And I remember like now I sit here like when people say to me, "Hey, you know, are you scared of edibles?" Bitch, when I was 13, I was eating shit without even thinking.
Yeah.
I went to see the Stones in Foreign in Philadelphia and I did blotter acid. That was the highest I've ever been on an acid. The highest. I was 13. I had gone to see the Stones 1 week and the Police the next at CBGB's, because in New Jersey, they didn't have pictures on your licenses.
Yeah.
So I was a concert. I did blotter acid at 13, eighth grade graduation.
Eighth grade.
A week in my system. It was in my system a week.
Are you serious?
A fucking week. I could feel like.
How much did you take?
A little piece of fucking. It was like a pill, like a see-through. You know, acid was different then.
It was plasticky.
It was plastic.
It was gelatin.
It was gelatin in those days.
Yeah, I've had that. They still do it. They used to call that stuff, I believe they call that stuff window pane, right?
Isn't window pane, yes. Yeah. Window pane
really?
Acid. Delicious. Yeah. Then they had four-way acid. I used to go to East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, a college there. There's a college. And they had two guys. You know those guys that go to college and never leave?
Yeah, I was like 45.
They were like 45, yeah. White beards.
Yeah.
And that's all they did. They made acids. And all that type of shit, mescalines, you know, microdot acid, which they call mescaline.
You ever taken acid, Bert?
Yeah.
You like it?
Nope.
You didn't like it?
I did not. I don't have that kind of brain.
It's weird.
I don't have that kind of brain that can process just let it go. Like, right. I start micromanaging, and the fucking worst feeling in the world is how long is this going
to
last?
Well, you didn't take a big, that's the, when that, when you have that problem, the way to solve it with acid is to take a much bigger dose. Because it's true. It's true. Because with acid, the crazy thing about LSD is each dose, depending on how many micrograms are in whatever you're taking, each dose is almost like a different drug. So a half hit of acid compared to two hits of acid, it's like two different drugs. So if you take a large enough dose, because that thing you're talking about, that's like lingering at the border of death. That's like when you're dying and it sucks and you're laying there and you know you're dying, but you can't quite die. That's the worst place to be is in between life and death. When you take a larger dose, it's like you get shoved into the void. And when that happens, you're no longer in control of your thought process. You just melt. You turn into a kaleidoscope of consciousness. Have you ever had that happen, Joey? I've been out in the desert on my hands and knees staring into the sand and disintegrate, literally just disintegrate.
I don't know if I want that feeling.
It's the bet. Well, you're going to get it. You're going to get it.
My big acid.
When you die, that's what
that's
happens.
That's why I'm fucking terrified of death.
It was funny because my big acid started when I was about 15, like with my friends. And after my mother died, I went into a tailspin of acid because at that time, I had so many things going on in my head that whenever I would take the acid, it would put everything into perspective of what was going on. You know, mother had just died. I'm 15. My mother had just died. I hated God. There's nothing like hating God for taking away. How can you love God?
Yeah.
And you took away my mother. I'm 15. I have nobody.
Yeah.
How could God exist? So at this time, I was going through all this stuff. So I would go home at night. I mean, this is some sad stuff. I would go home. I lived with this family. And they were like, my family were Italians, but they'd go to bed at 11:30. I had no curfew. I'd come in whenever I wanted. Sophomore, junior in high school.
Holy shit.
And whenever I had too much stuff on my mind, I would take a hit of acid, get a couple Michelobes, smoke a joint, and I would go home and listen to, like, Master Reality by Black Sabbath or fucking Sabotage, which is about women. It's about him getting rid of women. Every album had a different theme. And I would live through that album. And just say it's like a bag. You ever see Man on Fire?
Yeah.
Denzel, when he drinks, he'd go through all those emotions. He would cry and wave a gun around.
Yeah.
That's what I would go through. It's like a phobia you go through on that acid. It would take me in, but the next morning, it'd clear everything.
Right.
Like, I'm the type of person that'll tell you that I truly believe if somebody's got a lot of problems, give him a hit of acid and leave him by himself for a while. And he'll put everything into perspective. And I'd cry about my mother.
Yeah.
Then I'd laugh about the times we had. It was like a six-hour period. I'd take a shower and go to high school.
Holy shit.
I did this for... I can't lie to you guys. I did this. I had such an addiction to acid that I had to deal it. I would go down and buy 100 hits for $90 and sell them for $3 a piece. I'd sell 100 hits every 2 days.
Really?
Girls play hooky. They'd buy 25 hits. I was making a living off acid speed. Black Beauties, I would buy 1,000 for $45 and sell them for $1 a piece. That's how I put myself through high school. I had no parents. I had no Social Security. You know, they wouldn't give me Social Security because my mother had a fucking alias. That dumb fuck. So I couldn't get Social Security, so I had to figure out a way. But it's very interesting how people talk about acid. I'm telling you right now, at that time, and Duncan will attest for this. Duncan didn't know me, but he knows what I'm talking about. At that time, if I wouldn't have had the acid, I would have shot somebody. I would have taken a gun and shot a bunch of people.
Right.
And
really?
Shot myself. Yeah, because it slowed things down. It let me put everything into perspective. You know, why are you mad at God? Why are you mad at your mother? You know, she left me.
Yeah.
What the fuck? As you're dying, you can't say, what the fuck, cocksucker? I'll never suck a cock again. Keep me here with my son.
The crazy thing about acid, somebody was just telling me about this. Back when they were first doing, the CIA was doing the experiments with it and stuff, and they were like, you know, have you ever heard of MK Ultra? You know what that is?
No.
So MK Ultra was this, the name, there were a few different names of studies the CIA did with psychedelics. One was called MK Ultra, one was called Project Monarch. But they were trying to find a truth serum, and they were also trying to figure out how much can we, like, control a person's memories or a person's thoughts or a person's psyche, because, like, you know, the ultimate assassin is somebody who doesn't even know why they're killing somebody. Like, if you could get into someone's head and program them to kill someone and then make them forget that they've been programmed to kill someone.
I saw a Naked Gun.
That's it. Naked Gun is based on fucking MK Ultra.
Are you serious?
Yes, and Project Monarch. It's based on that.
What's that?
Hold on.
Oh, thanks.
But yeah, anyway, they were doing all these fucked up experiments with psychedelics, basically. And a lot of them that were doing the experiments were also taking LSD because they didn't know what it was. They thought it was fun. It's a great drug. But the LSD, after they started taking the LSD, they stopped wanting to do the experiments because it was teaching them about, you know, what it is to be a human, and it gives you this crazy empathy and stuff. And so the cool thing about acid, what's really interesting about it, and maybe why they call it acid, is it disintegrates whatever power structure that it gets into. So it's like acid dealers, people who start dealing acid, sometimes they'll just start giving it away because you go from wanting to make money to wanting to wake people up.
Yeah.
And it's a very anti-capitalist drug. It doesn't work for capitalism because when you start taking it and you start considering the notion of, like, man, wait a minute. When you're on acid and you start thinking about, I work fucking 50 hours a week in a job I don't like, but my life is the most precious thing ever. How the fuck am I parsing my life into increments where 50 hours a week is being sucked into some corporate vacuum? And when you're, like, in a normal state of consciousness, you could, like, it kind of works. But when you're on acid and you think about that, you're like, I have become a slave of the devil. I am chained to Lucifer. I am chained to the fucking legs of Satan. What am I doing? It's better for me to live in a fucking field somewhere, you know, eating fucking garbage out of the trash can, than to fucking go to and do these shitty jobs. And that's why there's now a 5-year mandatory minimum for possession of LSD. Did you know that?
Because they want to keep capitalism around?
Yeah, it's that much of a threat.
So where is it a 5-year minimum?
Everywhere. I've heard everywhere. And federally, it's a 5-year mandatory minimum. And when people get busted with sheets of acid, acid is one of the most potent psychedelics on the planet. It works in microgram dosages. 100 micrograms of LSD will send you on a great, powerful trip. That's like, I've heard, I don't know, but I've heard that's like the average dose now is around 100 mics. The acid you were taking back then was 500 microgram dosages. Was a normal
because the shit I took 2 years ago was garbage.
I
went on Twitter and asked for Pink Floyd. And
really?
I met the guy in Sherman Oaks, and he sold me a sheet of acid for $150, and it was okay, but it didn't do what it was supposed to do.
Really?
It didn't take you over that hump.
And Ari take acid?
Yeah, that was it. And then we took it at the UFC. It didn't really do nothing.
Really?
It enlightened. Not enlightened. It just made us giggle a little bit and stuff, but it wasn't the stuff that after an hour, I look at you, and you're not melting or turning into the devil. You're just appearing different. And then once I tap out, like, my big thing about acid was I liked it. Like, I could do it with Duncan and go somewhere. And Duncan, go. Don't talk to me. Go somewhere else in the room.
Yeah.
It's really weird when you're on acid. Me and Duncan, if we do it together, we'll be connected the rest of the night.
That's right.
We'll do something, and I'll look up, and Duncan will be looking at me, and we don't have to talk. We just both know what we're thinking. And that's it. Everything's done by facial because there's no time to talk. We're tripping. We're talking to people.
Yeah.
But my whole thing about acid was the same thing with Coke. And Coke didn't do the job. I had to take it home. Like, I could hang out with people for an hour or two, but my main source of acid was to reboot my computer. Yeah. Like every time, and it really fucking works for a guy like me. Like towards the end of the acid trip, I was happy as hell because my dilemmas were gone, or so I thought. The dilemmas were still there. I just learned how to deal with them better.
It cleanses you. It's a cleanse.
It cleanses you. It really is.
It's like you're. It's like what you're doing. It's like a liver cleanse for your mind.
I would fucking. It's so funny you say this. Joe and I had coffee yesterday. And I was telling him about. I was going to go to therapy, just to try it out. So I go to therapy and I talk to the guy about fucking all my issues or whatever. Really kind of really genuinely like what is the hashtag on Twitter? White people problems. No real issues. I don't have a real issue. But the guy goes, you know, therapy if done right will be like a long, slow acid trip. And then he says, or you could just do acid and get it all over done with in 10 hours.
That's
and I was
it.
Like,
that's
I,
it.
I was like, are you fucking serious?
I got to get your therapist's number. That guy sounds awesome.
It's $270 an hour.
That's too much. I got a good therapist.
Yeah.
I got a good therapist. But check it out, man. Here's the thing. The thing you just said about white people problems.
Yeah.
It doesn't fucking matter, man. Like, that's what people do is they're like, you know, I'm not in a fucking coal mine in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
I'm not in a...
I'm not in a blood diamond mine. I didn't lose my arm to savages that rolled through my fucking village and raped my sister and my mother and cut their lips off. And I look at the fucking world and I go, I don't have any fucking problems.
Yeah, but the thing is, man, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, it's time has shown that it really, like, there's people who work in a fucking blood diamond mine and are, I don't know, but theoretically pretty fucking happy. And you know what I mean? There's people who live in a fucking penthouse and are miserable. These little fucking the things that they are real problems is what I'm saying. Whatever it is, because it represents in your mind your a form of your neurons have grown in a certain way, creating a negative loop. It's like having your home wired the wrong way. You know your brain changes shape, right? You know about that?
No.
So like they've done studies on like Buddhist monks, and they found that your brain, the neurological makeup of your brain, actually the structure of your brain actually shifts according to like how much you meditate and even what type of meditation you do. Your brain is plastic. So what happens to people is according to like what when you were younger, your brain kind of grows into the, you know, like how tomatoes grow where you like put those fucking things down and the tomatoes grow around those things.
Yeah.
Well, that structure is your family and your neurons kind of form around that structure. And that formation is your perception of the world or what Robert Anton Wilson calls your reality tunnel. And so it doesn't matter if you work in the point is you cannot be working in a diamond mine, but if you had a fucked up family or weird shit happens to you, your brain is acting as though you are constantly in danger.
Yeah.
If you grow up in a stressful situation, if you grow up in a place where shit's weird, your brain doesn't just, when you're out of the situation, your brain's like, oh, everything's better now. Your brain has actually formed itself to deal with that initial trauma or stress.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what good therapy does, is it like rewires the circuitry of your brain to form according to the way things are now instead of the way things used to be.
Yeah, I don't know. My brain is overthink shit and I think I just obsess about shit. Like we were talking this today, I was thinking I have fucking Bell's palsy because I have I have a dry spot on my face and I can feel it all day long. So the whole day I'm just going, oh, I'm getting Bell's palsy, and then my fucking left leg was numb and I was like, what the fuck?
Right.
Like shit's just falling apart. That's why I'm doing. I think it's this cleanse. I think this cleanse I'm doing is kind of, I smell a cigarette. I want a cigarette now for some fucking no reason.
Because the cleanse.
I want a cigarette. My body's craving the unhealthy. Like
fucking shit up. Fucking shit up.
Yeah. Yeah. As I heard your lighter, I go, I'm going to grab a cigar and just start smoking a cigar. But then I'm like, the fuck? I'm in the middle of a cleanse. Yeah. I can't smoke a cigar.
That's the fucking wiring. That's what fucking addiction is, man. Addiction is when your brain wires it. Because the way your mind works, it's so brilliant. Based on a different time period in human history, when you consider like when you're born in a village somewhere in the primordial jungle surrounded by tigers and lions and giant hawks or whatever people had to deal with back then, your mind needed to quickly...
I have that fucking mind. I have the mind. So Leanne, okay, Leanne, we're with the girls and we're in D.C. Leanne, my wife, wants to show the girls how the subway works. So we, the real excited, they buy their ticket. They punch their ticket. We go down the escalator, and then Leanne takes them. I fucking swear to God, this is the edge. She takes them to lean over and look. And I'm like, and I start panicking, right? Because my brain goes, there's 19 different things that can happen right now that could kill them. And I start, like, and she's like, what? We're not going to, everything's
like a guy,
fine.
One of those subway killers.
A homeless guy just pushes them in.
Why wouldn't he?
Why wouldn't he? He's got fucking nothing
to lose. That's like a home run. You get a mother and
her two kids who are all holding hands. That's like watching a house of cards fall.
Yeah.
And so I go, get away. And I get really angry. And I go, sure. You can't not listen to me. This is how my brain works. There was a dude, I was in the gym at the hotel doing the elliptical, and there was a dude came up behind me, and he was standing behind me, like doing something behind me, and I can't see him, and I'm like, you can't do that to me.
I tell people all the time, dog, what the fuck, what manners would you get?
Yeah.
What the fuck did you learn? Get the fuck away from me. That happens to me at the Y. They'll come stretch behind you.
Yeah.
I don't like people behind me, especially agents at the blackjack table. That's always a bad situation. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You could be up $1,000, you start losing, look behind you. There's always a little Chinese guy. I hate fucking people behind me close.
This is what you guys are talking about is a really low level form of what they call PTSD. It's like, so what happens is in war, basically your mind is wired so that when your adrenaline shoots up and when you're in danger, your mind starts taking these very specific snapshots of what's happening, because the next time you get into that kind of danger, it wants to know exactly what to do and what's going to happen. It's a survival thing that your mind does. So these people go to war and they get into the literally on Earth, like some of the worst situations that you can get in your life, where you're surrounded by people trying to blow up your body. And so your adrenaline goes through the roof and your mind starts getting imprinted by this. In the same way, like if I shine a bright light into your eyes, it's like the event is getting burnt into your fucking brain and it's just there forever. So they leave the war and now they've got this mental sunspot stuck in their head of that time they were surrounded by Taliban trying to fucking kill them. And every day they feel like that. It just comes up at random in smaller stressful situations. So little thing will happen.
I fucking wish I could credit this person, but someone who's in Iraq for a while, I might have been my cousin, said they had a really hard time walking through the parking lot at the grocery store. Being that wide open scared the living shit out of them.
Yeah.
And they were like, I don't know. I understand that I'm in wherever I'm in, Philadelphia, but just walking through, like parking at one end and just walking through a parking lot, you just start going. I'm very vulnerable. I don't have like,
right.
I was in the movie theater. This is after the Colorado thing, and dude behind me is going through his bag, just going through his bag, and I'm like,
focus. Can't focus. It's fucking horrid.
Yeah, and I'm just start, and I'm like, and but it is before the movie started, just going through his bag, and I'm like, I start thinking of crazy shit. Like he's got, and then I hear like something pouring, and as opposed to going, he brought a cocktail and he's making himself a cocktail. That's probably what will happen. I have no fucking idea. I never saw. I start thinking he's got lighter fluid and he's gonna light me on fire. Like that's the way my brain goes.
Yes.
And then I'm fucking panicked. You know who had that bad is who we were in Scotland together, Patrice O'Neill. He was like, man, whatever he called it, he could fucking see danger from 3 blocks away.
He thought he had spider sense.
Yeah, was that it? Yeah,
well, that's what Spider-Man had.
Well, I'm going to tell you something, guys. Did you ever suffer a death when you were younger or something traumatizing?
I did. I had a couple things fairly traumatizing when I was young, but no death.
It's really weird because I'm a positive person for the most part. But I also know how fast life could change. I'm like you. If I walk in, I see Duncan looking off a building. I'm like, hey, fucko, get away from the fucking building. Come on. And you'll go, Joey, but you're my brother. Get the fuck away from the building because I know how fast things could change.
Yep.
When you know how fast, there's a tape on YouTube about me calling Duncan and busting his balls about Satan people. Because
I used to hang out with Satan.
I know how fast things could happen. I know that I could just come over and go, hey, Bert, let's take a ride to Marie St. And as I make a left turn, some guy cuts me off and I take
paralyzed.
A gun out. And there you are in the fucking car.
Yeah.
And it just happens like this.
Yeah.
I know life. So I'm the same way. Like, I know where you live. There's nights I'll get off the Floral and I'll drive past here just to make sure your house isn't on fire. Just to make sure. I do that with Felicia. I do that with anybody who lives
in
my area.
Here's the thing, man. Here's the problem with that, Joey. This is where that is a...
Oh, yeah. No. There's a good and a bad to it.
Well, no, because the shit, when shit really changes, when things really change, you never knew. The thing that gets you, 9 times out of 10, you never knew it was coming.
You never knew it was coming.
And so you can't, this is the infuriating thing, and this is the thing we all try to do, is we try to prepare for this thing, but it always tricks us. It always comes from the place we didn't know. And that's why the idea is, that's where the big challenge is to just fucking let go. Because if you add up all the stress, think about it. Think of your entire life. Add up all the stress that you've endured for trying to prepare for this inevitable thing that never comes. It's almost as bad as getting in a traumatic accident.
No, but I don't look at it like that. It's not a negative. Look, right now we're sitting here.
Yeah.
Let's pretend you had a year and a half old daughter or a boy.
Yeah.
And your boy came in here. Right now, as soon as he walk in, I go, Bert, the table. Yep. See that fucking table with that edge? That's what I'm worried about. And not because I'm negative, because I know that this motherfucker could trip on a cord.
Yep.
We're over here getting high. Next thing you know, I'm in an emergency room with a year-old fucking kid because of the table. You know why? Because it happened to me. All these fucking scars under me and the tub, the table. I'm one of those guys. And I know how fast I was going to buy blow and I ended up kidnapping a guy with a machine gun. I know how fast life could fucking fly. People don't know when they're young how fast your life could change, man. I've been in cars with people that were going, hey, we're going to do something, and next thing you know, they're running out with a gun and going, get the fucking car running. You're like, what the fuck did I just do? I used to rob gas stations. I would never tell the Gatorade driver I was robbing a gas station.
Really?
I'll go, Bert, what are you doing tomorrow? Nothing. 9 o'clock, pick me up. Let me buy you breakfast. On the way to breakfast, I go rob the station and tell you to park down the corner. This Duncan owes me $200, that cocksucker. I was going to rob the gas station or burglarize a drug dealer's house. And I come back and get in the car with you, and all of a sudden the car is, and you go, what's going on? I just robbed this fucking cocksucker that beat me out of a gram of blow 2 weeks ago. And you're like, Joey, next time tell me. If I would have told you, you would have never showed.
No, yeah, you're right. You're totally right. I both that's so fucking, that's so funny. That concept that you said about one minute I'm getting a gram of blow, next thing I have a machine gun and I'm kidnapping somebody. I do think things go that quick.
Yeah, my friend went to get a blow job one night in the city by himself. Went to get a pack of coke, straight guy. Stockbroker went to get a bag of blow. He did it 20 times. He's done it 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Said for some reason there was a hook around the corner. And he goes, I might as well get my dick sucked. Went to get his dick sucked and he got held up. Came back with no blow. They took his license. He had been there 50 times. And he told me. He goes, I knew it going in.
Yeah.
But that's how fast things could happen.
Yeah, especially if you're fucking robbing stores and have a machine gun and are going to hookers.
No, this kid was this.
It's not like these things are coming out of the fucking woods to suck your dick and rob you.
You go get a joint. You go to fucking 7-Eleven and three guys walk. I mean, there's so many things that could happen. I know they could happen. So I look for that shit.
I watch for that shit.
I constantly have an eye
open.
Last night I was telling the story that my dad was a big-time bookie, Juan Tuero. I did testicle testament last night about Juan. This guy that was a shooter, crazy, but he loved me. He's my stepdad. And before we go to his bookmaking office, he'd always take a ride around the block. He'd hide his guns down the corner. He was a fucking 24/7 criminal.
Yeah.
And one day I went to karate. I was a karate geek, and I went downtown where he used to play cards. And as I was getting out of karate, I seen three cop cars with his uniform and a detective. 6 o'clock at night. And I get home, and I go, where are you going tonight? He goes, I'm going to play cards. And I go, I wouldn't go down there if I was you tonight. He's like, what are you talking about? I go, I seen some cops. He goes, there's always cops down there. I go, nah, they were talking weird. He fucking, as he was getting dressed, he left. He came back 10 minutes later with a Cuban sandwich. He goes, I'm going to take your advice. The next morning, he wakes me up. He's like, look at the fucking paper. You saved my life. The card game got busted. Some guy had coke and a gun. All those guys got arrested. Thank you. It's your eyes. I look for everything. I've been on the road with Ari, and I go, Ari, look, that's a drug deal on the corner. How did you see that? I just saw it. I know the body.
I can tell stuff people doing.
Yeah, the body movement.
Yeah, the two dudes were walking down the street in I think Beverly Glen Canyon. We had to go to a kids party. They're walking down the street, and I see them walking down the street, and I just watch them look at me, and I go, "No one looks at me that way if they're not doing some shit."
Right.
I pull around the corner, come back, and I see them looking in cars to steal a fucking stereo, and I fucking go into the party, call the cops. Fucking bam! Alarm goes off. Woo, woo, woo!
Wow.
Yeah, I can. But what you said is accurate. I fucking lose so much energy.
Energy, absolutely.
No, don't. There's a. This is the fucking. What you're talking about is like the dilemma of the postmodern man. Like T.S. Eliot. What the fuck? It's the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock is this famous postmodern existentialist poem about this kind of eternal, the weird, endless anxiety and suffering that modern people go to. Yeah. And there's one of the lines in it is, "I will show you fear and a handful of dust." And it's like the idea of like we're all haunted. Our minds are like haunted houses filled with the ghosts of things that have happened to us in the past that keep emerging into the present, whispering horror into our ears, so that even though we're in this kind of like amazing paradise of life, we always have a low level or high level of anxiety that's haunting us. And that's one of the big challenges is fucking doing the pull-up where you get over it, because you can prepare for danger without being terrified. And the great warlords, Sun Tzu, the great masters of fighting, the great martial artists, Bruce Lee, they're not afraid. They're fucking prepared. And they know that anxiety and fear...
It fuels that.
That's why we're Jiu-Jitsu 2012.
It fuels that. But I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to tell you what the worst thing a man could do.
What's that?
Think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Every time I think, it's a bad situation for me.
Yep.
Yes.
Every time I think, it's a bad situation.
How do you get your brain to stop thinking? I would like to be able to shut my brain off at night. Listen, when I wake up at 3 in the morning.
I'll tell you something, it's impossible. It's who we are. It's what we do. We learn how to shut it down longer. We get sharper about it.
Yeah.
You never learn to shut it down completely. You just learn how to shut it down for moments in time so it doesn't affect you and what you're doing in your daily routines. But I love fear. Fear, if you go on stage, the 30 seconds before you go on stage, if something doesn't happen to you, you got to get out of this.
Yeah,
because it's not affecting you.
It's got to affect you.
I love that danger. You know, I talk about directors in the 70s and today. They're garbage because they didn't draw for you. One of the greatest fear scenes of all time, and I know this, unless you've been in trouble, you don't know this, is The Godfather when Michael kills Sollozzo in the restaurant. What happens before he goes out there? He thinks, and you hear the train.
Yeah,
you hear the train going, ee. I know from experience, when you're going to do something bad, you lose your hearing. I know for a fact.
Wow.
When I say to you, sit right here, we're going to go fuck Duncan up.
Really?
And I know I got to go in there, and Duncan's wife is in there, and we're going to fuck this motherfucker. I know that every time I did something bad, you lose your hearing because your senses, you get spidey senses.
Yeah.
You're focusing on what's going on.
Yeah.
That fear, like whenever I would go, all right, sit right here, bro, I'm going to go in through the back window if you see a cop. So I'm walking to that back window to kick that motherfucker in. I go deaf. I hear that fear. That's you.
That's why people get caught when they do shit, because there's so much going on.
There's so much going on. And that fear, that deafness is an alert. It's fucking your body's in DEFCON 4.
Yeah.
Anything could happen now. Take that gun out. Your body's in DEFCON 4. And when you leave that situation, what happens to your body after that is amazing. Everything. You just want to, I'm going to go to a pawn shop and get rid of the jewelry. Go. Call me in an hour.
Yeah.
It takes so much out of you. You don't see that. Unless you're going to do something bad, you don't hear that. You go deaf.
You know what's crazy, Joey? You got to read. Have you read War by Sebastian Younger, the book about?
No.
Oh, man. I'm going to buy it.
Oh, wait. That's the guy that climbed Everest.
Yeah. I know. I don't know if he climbed Everest.
No, Sebastian, he did Into Thin Air?
I don't know if that's...
He did Call of the Wild.
No, shit. I didn't know that was the same guy.
Not Call of the Wild. The one they made a movie about where the guy goes out into Alaska. Is it Into Thin Air?
No, I can't.
Into Thin Air is the book about Everest. Sebastian Younger was a journalist for Outside Magazine.
He's amazing. And this book, War, is this... Have you read it?
No, I haven't, but now I'm going to.
You got
to
read it, because it's like it's not a moral. He didn't want to take a moral approach to like war's good, war's bad. He wanted to describe it perfectly. So it's just a description of what it's like to be in the middle of a firefight where you're about to die. And he has the best description of what happens to you when you're in that kind of stressful situation. And what you're talking about going deaf, the military knows that effect. They've studied it so perfectly, because they want to understand every single level that happens when a soldier gets into a dangerous situation, because it gets higher than you're going deaf. it gets higher to the point where you'll freeze. Like, once things get too intense, you'll almost go comatose. You'll pass out if things get too intense. And the military has to understand every single mode of that so that they can control it and modulate it and train their soldiers to not, like, fucking lose it in the middle of the most intense moment of their life. Like, that's what boot camp, that's what fucking hardcore military training is all about, dealing with the sound of the death train coming down the fucking track so that you can, like, keep your head in, like, a situation where you're probably going to die. It's fascinating, man. The human body is so fucking incredible.
The mind is, it really is. And the more you learn about yourself, it opens up so many doors. That's the whole thing. Listen, this whole life we lead is, yeah, we party, we want to be rich, but the whole end of the journey, when you're fucking leaving, ascending into wherever the fuck God takes us, you're thinking about what happened. You know, you're thinking, what did I really get out of this fucking life, and what you learned? You know, I love learning about myself.
I want to go to Cuba with you.
Absolutely.
Let's, like, we were talking about going down the Amazon one time. But I would love to take, like, a fucking adventure.
Let's
like
go
a,
to Cuba.
Like a, I'd fucking go to Cuba in a heartbeat.
I would too.
Cuba would
second.
Destroy my insides because it's who I am. And it would be, it's like fake going on Facebook for the first time.
We should do
of your high school friends.
Let me tell you something.
Sign up and you're like, what the fuck? It's too real.
It's the worst.
We should do a documentary with us all going to Cuba.
Let's do it.
I'm going to see my sister, who I have not seen since my mother died in 19. I haven't seen my sister since 1966.
She's in Cuba?
Cuba. Blood sister. Father, mother. Everything is the same. My mother kept traveling back and forth. So in 66, she's like, come. And she's like, well, I'm in high school. I'm in grammar school. Let me wait till I'm graduating. I'll go to high school in the United States. That day never came because they closed Cuba tight. And then my mother passed, you know.
That was one of the most prolific things he said. I said, I was like, you haven't kept in touch with her? And he goes, no, when she died, she had all the numbers in her head.
My mother took it. My mother didn't write nothing down. She was an old school person.
So it's like, it's like all those connections were severed. With one person passing. If my wife dies, I will not know where my money's kept. I won't know our passwords. I don't even know how much money we have. I don't even know if I would pay none of our bills. I would be like, I'm fucking, I like, I don't know how to do homework with my kids. There's a lot of shit I don't know how to do that I would fucking be like, I would be like, I need someone to come in and be my new wife and take care of all this shit that I don't know. We gotta go, we should do a documentary where we go to Cuba and we'll fucking, it'll have pathos and ethos, partying, heartfelt.
It'd be the best.
It'll be the best. Fucking.
We could do a whole series. Cuba. The Amazon to do ayahuasca. I would give anything to take ayahuasca with you two in the fucking Amazon. That would be the most surreal.
How about heroin in the Bronx? Same effect as that. You know what I'm saying? Why go to ayahuasca? We go to the Bronx with three Puerto Ricans and a black dude and do a line of fucking...
The log line of the movie is anything can change in a second. Yeah. 1 minute you're getting some blow, next thing you know you got a machine gun and you're kidnapping somebody.
Why I gotta take a passport to find myself?
Yeah.
All you gotta do is go to the Bronx, get a $10 bag of heroin. We'll chop that motherfucker three ways and put on Led Zeppelin, The Story Remains the Same.
Joey,
after that, come back to me 2 hours later and tell me about your life.
Joey, I'm not going to be happy until there's a Joey Diaz ride at Universal City where, like, you end up, it just starts off where you're going to 7-Eleven to get a Coke.
And you rob a gas station.
Oh, I fucking... I had a dream. So the totally separate fucking subject. So when I used to do that show, Birth of the Conqueror, it was all about roller coasters. And they were like, and I had a few parks contact me about what would be your dream roller coaster. Because I'd ridden every roller coaster in the fucking country. I'd ridden them all. I wanted to ride where it's called the Mine Shaft. And it starts with you getting, and it's all underground in the park. So you get into a tube and they shoot you down.
Cool.
And you scream. It's like, and it's pitch black. You don't know what's coming up, but there's little holes all around the park, so you can hear people. You'll be walking by the water fountain. You're,
that's awesome.
Out of nowhere, and then it just pops you up somewhere in the park, and you're like, fuck, I gotta go find my way back.
That's fucking cool, man. That's awesome.
But that could be the Joey Diaz ride. It just, you get on the ride, and all of a sudden, it's
like,
you rob
a gas station, then you fucking go to a drug dealer's house on OD.
No, it starts off, you're in line, everything's fucking cool. Every once in a while, you hear Joey's voice, like he's, hey, cocksucker, let's get a Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Come on, that's what it just seems like. It's like you're getting in a car to get a Diet Coke. That's the first fucking thing.
Next thing you know, you're outside of the park and your wallet's gone.
Yeah. The fucking ride pickpockets you.
Yeah.
The seats of the ride fucking pickpocket you.
Oh, that's fucking great.
Yeah, man. That would be cool. That'd be fucking awesome. It is true, though, man. You know, the whole thing can shift at any second. Anything could happen. I mean, fuck, there's so much to be afraid of. It's almost like, you know how, like, comments on the internet, the good comments, it's almost like you just skip over them.
Yeah.
But the bad comments you fixate on for forever, like, they kind of burn into your head.
Yeah.
Because in the same way, it's like we're all talking about this crazy shit that can happen to us. But, like, also, amazing things happen all the fucking time.
Yeah.
But why don't we fixate on that? Why isn't that the stuff that our mind gravitates towards? Why isn't it when we're walking around, our mind, instead of thinking, like, you know, I think there's a really good chance that I'm about to get robbed, or I think that I might have cancer, I think that I'm close to an ant. Why isn't our mind thinking some incredible synchronicity is about to happen?
I think this is the one thing I'll say boldly, and that is, yesterday I was kind of fucked up. I was kind of fucked up because I started this cleanse. I hadn't slept, and I was like, and I'd woken up in the middle of the night having like a lot of anxiety about a lot of shit that I was going to go to therapy for. And then I went, and Joey and I had coffee, and then Maz Gibrani pulled up, and we talked for a little bit, and it was such a positive hour of hanging out that I left, and it was like that was the positive comment on YouTube that erased all the negative ones.
Right.
And I skateboarded home, and I was like, man, I really genuinely was like, I don't need to go to fucking therapy. I'm in a great fucking mood.
Yeah.
I notice that it's sunny now. I notice that it's bright. I notice that there's a wind. I was like, this is all. And then I was like, I'm carrying this forward. I'm going to pass this forward. I called Travel Channel, and I was like, you guys got to meet with Maz. He's going to be out there. And I tried to set up a meeting for him. And so, like, got the ball rolling on that. I was like, I'm going to fucking move it forward.
Yeah.
Drink some water.
That's it.
Yeah.
See, that's the fucking idea, man. Like, every time I go and have breakfast with you, Diaz, there have been times where I've, like, woken up with the fucking Satan tap dancing on my chest. Where when we were going to breakfast, and then I hang out with you for an hour, and I leave, and it's like I'm cleansed. I feel better. Things are great. That's the deal. That's the...
Guys, look, I could sit here and... insult somebody. I hate insulting people. This is my opinion of therapy and what works, okay? I believe in therapy. I believe talking to somebody is great. I just don't want you opening up shit and getting my day off. My best therapists have been people that I am nothing like.
Yeah. Right?
Okay?
Yeah.
We have nothing. I would never take you to rob a gas station. I would never, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I would never involve you in some of my stupid... The best thing to have is friends. They're your best therapist. I'm telling you right now.
Fuck yeah.
I talk to people on the phone from Jersey that are fucking professional people. One has two chairs and a stock. We have nothing in common in our life. But whenever he's got a beef, and this guy's worth millions, he calls me. Whenever I got a beef, I call him, and it's just an hour conversation. And I hang up the phone. You know, I'm having a hard time right now. I'm going to be 50. I got a girl coming. 50. Are you fucking kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me, guys? I'm not that. I wasn't raised in that family type thing.
Yeah.
My mother would give me a 20 and go cook dinner. Do what you need to do. There's a steak in there you can cook, or you go get a 20 for dinner. I got to go to the bar. I got to go close the bar, you know?
Yeah.
So I never really learned. Every fucking 2 weeks, I had one yesterday with my wife. My wife said, just vent.
Yeah.
Because I thought about it. I think there ain't nothing to think about it. Get up, motherfucker, and go do what the fuck you got to do. What I try to tell Duncan is I'm not negative. We go for auditions. You go for an audition, you fucking kill it in the room. Kill it. They want to suck your dick. You just go in and kill them with words. They don't even let you read.
Yeah.
And you come home, and your heart, you're positive. I got this thing.
Yeah.
But you know what? Fucking Big Pussy could call him and say he's available and I'm down the drain. That's how my life is. I always look at what is going to happen.
Yeah.
But I also know what could happen. And if you don't look at what could happen, then you're shooting yourself in the fucking leg. I look at the whole situation.
You don't want to be the moron sitting there going with his dick in his hand going, I was supposed to be a star.
Right.
Like, I see the negative around the corner.
You have to see it.
Yeah.
You have to know where you stand in your life, and it makes it easier. I will never get up and go, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
That's the inner. That's the old Joey and we all have that. We want you to do a Tonight Show. You're going to be happy for the first hour. You're going to call Bert. You're going to call me. After that, when you get alone, you're going to start having doubts.
Yeah.
Doubts. Yeah. That joke sucks. I've been doing that joke for a fucking year, and it kills, but it sucks all of a sudden, life sucks. And for 2 weeks, you got this fucking Dr. Zhivago in your mind telling you you're not funny. You're killing at the store. You're killing. But you're like, I can't. it's all part of the thing.
Well, you know,
and then you catch yourself and you go, what the fuck is wrong with me?
Yeah.
I'm a fucking savage. I followed Paul Mooney. Who's going to stop me?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You catch yourself and go, what the fuck? Give me the fuck. And that's how I get with needles. The whole way I'm down on the 101 doing 10, once I get to Waxler's and I see the girl, I go, you know what? Give me the fucking needle. It's over. I just make believe I'm getting raped.
You know what they call it?
I just turn the other way. I'm like a Japanese chick. You ever see Japanese porn? They just lay there like a fucking Momo.
Oh, yeah.
Same fucking thing. The guy's fucking hitting them in the face with a condom, and they sit there, they're in fucking danger.
What the fuck is going on in Japan, man? What's the deal with a fucking
with tentacles?
You haven't seen this stuff?
No.
Like, that's a big deal. Like fucking I just saw this terrible cartoon. No, it was a movie. Where a chick's got like her legs are like an alligator's mouth, but is like with teeth. But you can see as she like snaps it, there's a pussy in its throat's a pussy. Anyway, there's crazy shit going on out there. But what? To get back to the point.
Well, wait, what was the chick that was 16 and did porn that they caught her 20 years ago?
Fuck.
Yes,
I know her name.
She's got Tracy Lords. Movie called Tracy Does Tokyo. 1983-82, and she shoves a fucking tentacle in her pussy.
They like tentacles.
You gotta find it though. You gotta find it. And I said it on a podcast once, and a couple people hit me up. They went looking for it. It's called Tracy Does Tokyo. It was like her fourth film. I worked at a Captain Video in Snowmass Village, and everybody came in, and one day I had to watch it. They're like, she shows a tentacle in her little fucking pussy.
What
while she's
is it? Is it a prosthetic like plastic tentacle or a squid tentacle?
I was sure it's easier to get a squid tentacle.
I was too coked up to remember. I think it was a real octopus that was sleeping. He was an octopus on a quaalude. You know what I'm saying?
Is that good luck or bad luck if you're an octopus and end up getting shoved into a porn star's pussy?
It depends what day it is. You know what I'm saying?
Better than being sushi.
Let me ask you something. You ever see a chick that's missing teeth, a crack hole, at 3 in the morning, she comes over for your change, and you're a little buzzed, and you're like, what if I ask this chick to suck my dick? So on a Tuesday, you might not ask that chick. Your wife might blow you.
Yeah.
But that particular Wednesday, she just came around, the gum looks good.
Yeah.
Fuck it, suck it. I look the other way like a needle, you know what I'm saying?
Dude, can you imagine being out in the woods camping, you get sucked into a UFO, you're in like a holding chamber, you're like, this is it. I'm going to see advanced aliens, they're going to teach me the secret of the universe. A door opens, a hand grabs you and just starts shoving your head into an alien pussy.
Yeah.
You're just
and they're videotaping it.
Yeah, they're
and they're just like laughing and they're like, heh, and you're like, what the fuck's happening to me?
It smells like green death.
Yeah. I always feel like when I was a kid, when I was single, I always wanted that dream scenario. This is what I thought you were gonna say. Where you're in the woods and then like a girl comes up and she's like,
right.
We're like, hey, I'm camping too. Let's camp together. And then you guys, next thing you know, have crazy sex.
Yeah.
Married, I've had more of those fucking serendipitous situations that I've had to say no to than I've ever had in my entire life.
Like what?
Like, there was a girl the other night, I get done the show. The Thursday night, I'm working on not drinking as much on the road. So Thursday night, I get done the show, and I go, I'm going to fucking go to the gym, and I'm going to work out. Go to the gym, start doing the elliptical, and this chick comes in. She was a stewardess. She just landed, smoking hot, gets on the elliptical next to me, and we both make a joke that we're working out at fucking 11:30 at night.
Right.
And we work out the exact same amount of time. We get off at the same thing, and we start talking, and we walk out, and they're coming down from the rooftop bar, and they're bringing bottles of wine. And I said, oh, I'd love a bottle of wine. And they were like, grab two. And I look at the girl, and she grabs one, and I grab one. Now, if I'm single, I go, let's go have a glass of wine. And she'd go, of course. We've just been making each other laugh. But I'm married, so I was like, beat it, bitch. I was like, I'm going to go in my room and fucking work on my Twitter.
God,
it was fucking perfect.
Torture.
And I was like, I've been having a lot of those where it's like, where like a girl is hitting on you and you see it happening and you're like, fuck, I got to pass that shit up.
Rule number one, and a lot of these fucking dummies don't know, in the 70s and 80s, they had all these publications, how to pick up women. How to do this, Spanish Fly, which I tried on my grandmother one time. I bought it, and I put it in a fucking thing, and nothing happened. So I knew fine. So this whole thing before Yoshi's Banana Bread went all the way back. I've been dosing bitches for years.
One thing about picking up chicks, they used to tell you in magazines.
You want to pick up chicks?
Yes.
Just put a wedding band on. swear to God. I never understood how stupid men are. You put a wedding band on, now they have something to fight for. You ever try to hit a girl and she fights you? Well, I have a boyfriend at home. How fucking crazy do you go?
Yeah.
You go fucking bananas because she just told you you can't. She can't have you. Yeah. You can't have her. Listen, I was in the halfway house. I had a wedding band on because I was getting married that September. I was in the halfway house for 6 months leading up to that. I probably got my dick sucked or a good piece of ass 3 or 4 nights a week at that halfway
house. It's true, man. You know what that's based on, man? This is where it gets fucking weird because there's, I think, an evolutionary component to that effect because the way people used to fuck, like, you know, is you'd have multiple partners. Like, you know, I've talked about this on this show probably too much because this guy, Dr. Chris Ryan wrote this book, Sex at Dawn. About how monogamy isn't like it's not in our genetics to be monogamous, but you know why a cock is shaped like a plunger?
So it's like an arrow, right? So it sucks the cum out?
Sucks the cum out.
Yeah.
Because the idea was what works best for humans is if a lot of people are coming inside the same girl, because theoretically, the guy with the strongest, I guess, most powerful jizz is the one who's going to get her pregnant, and that's going to be the healthiest baby in the village. So if everybody in the village is fucking this girl, then it's going to be one thing's for certain: the guy with like bad jizz isn't going to get her pregnant. The guy who's got some problem with his semen, that's not the one who's going to impregnate her. It's going to be the healthiest guy theoretically, not all the time, of course. So in that way, competition, the thing that we view as a kind of annoyance or an irritation or something horrible, is an actual implicit part of our evolution, of us like getting to where we are right now, is all based on competition, which is why what you're saying makes a lot of fucking sense.
Yeah.
If you've got a wedding ring on, mate, it sends this signal.
Oh my God. It's natural.
It was something that I could not even control.
Really?
I couldn't even control it. There was 60 guys in this place and maybe 10 girls, and everybody's on a rotation. And there was a time we were all eating, and I was like, I fucked 6 of the 10 girls with this stupid wedding band. I would just say, I'm engaged. Are you fucking kidding me? They go fucking bananas. They want to knock you off. They want to see if they can knock you off the fucking horse. It's amazing. So all these idiots, you know, it's amazing as you get older, you find out how to pick up pussy effortlessly. I go to Vegas with Joe and the guys, and every weekend I look at all these guys getting dressed up with their matching pockets on their pants and their tap-out shirt.
Yeah.
And they're walking around at night looking for pussy. Ah!
Yeah.
Ah! You in Vegas, you go to your room at 10 o'clock, and you go to bed on a Friday night. You wake up about 4:30, you smoke a joint, you wash yourself, you go downstairs to the cafeteria, and wait for the fucking flies to come to the spider. They come in all fucked up. Every woman goes to Vegas to suck a cock. Nobody wants to come home without a prize.
Why did I never?
Nobody wants to come home without a prize. They come in at 4 o'clock and they sit by themselves and they'll talk to you, and they'll ask you, "Do you have blow?" Yeah, I have nothing. I got aspirins. But at 4 o'clock, a chick's not going to know the difference between coke or an aspirin. They're dumb fucks. I would give. You know how many times I got my dick sucked giving a chick bare aspirin for my heart? That white shit. I go in the bathroom, crush it up with my fucking mouthwash or something, come right out. Look at this cocaine I just got.
Why did I never think of that?
The best hotel to do with that is the Kid Hotel, the Palms.
Really?
Oh, I've gotten my dick sucked every time at the Palms on Friday and Saturday.
That's like the MTV hotel.
Just go downstairs at 5 o'clock and go on a payphone.
You look fresh and staggering. Clean.
You're fresh and clean. Your game is fresh.
Right.
Yeah.
Your game is on the money, and they come to you.
Right.
You know, you're going to be in my room, bitch.
Yeah.
Really? Well, where's my girlfriend? She passed out. You might as well come up. And they're goners. Nobody wants to go to Vegas and not come home with a prize.
God damn, that's a great
thing. That's it. Why do you kill yourself going out with 6 gorillas? Ain't nobody going to pick up no pussy with 6 guys.
Right.
Yeah.
And you ain't going to break up 6 girls. Why are you wasting your time getting a number? If I want a number, I'll go on fucking Skype or something like that. You know, I don't want no numbers. I want my dick sucked. I want quality. I got time for fucking romance and Match.com. And
what was that like back in the day? Like, you used to roll around with Joe and Eddie Bravo and all those guys back when like everyone was single. That must have been a fucking
Listen, I'm no fucking Mel Gibson, but I always squeeze the blowjob out. Because they'd always come looking for Joe, and I tell them, Joe's not available. What can I do anything to meet Joe? You got to suck my dick. Tempe, I got so many dick sucks in Tempe for girls that wanted to meet Joe. It's pathetic.
Are you serious?
I just want to be on Fear Factor. Suck my dick. I'll get you an audition Tuesday.
Joey, didn't you tell me a story once about how you got your dick sucked in a bathroom at a show? And then you got on stage.
And the chick was making out with her boyfriend.
Yeah.
That happened all the time at the store.
Shut up.
It's disgusting.
How long have you been doing comedy?
94.
Really?
Full time. Yeah, like really into it. Holy shit. 94. You know, but it's funny how your life, when you first start comedy, you fuck anything. Like when you're in comedy at first, that's part of it. You're like, dog, I didn't know about the bitches.
Yeah.
You know, you fuck everything. I used to do triple one-nighters. And the reason is now, Duncan's been hit on a lot. You've been hit on. Even me, as ugly as I am, some girl came up to me at the Ice House last night and wouldn't leave.
Really?
Wouldn't fucking leave. Now it's like, we've done this already. We've been here. First of all, I would never take a woman back to my room. That's Michael Irvin type stupid shit.
Yeah.
Especially if you're married, a girlfriend. You don't ever take a woman into your room because you can't talk yourself out of it.
Right.
She was in your room, stupid.
Yeah.
Right.
But we didn't do nothing. Are you fucking retarded? Listen, they suck your dick downstairs. Nobody goes in my room.
Downstairs where?
Anywhere. Under a fucking ladder. The best blowjob I ever got was in Knoxville, Tennessee, at the Comedy Catch years ago. Me and Vinny Capola on a Friday night. There was like 18 people in the audience. And I go out there, and there's this young girl, and the husband starts heckling me.
Yeah.
He's telling me how it's her 21st. I didn't even tell you about this, Duncan. It's her 21st birthday, and she loves to fucking suck, and she's getting drunk. And we're just going back and forth because there wasn't enough people to do a show.
Yeah.
And she's telling me how the husband would take it to a card game and make her suck guys' dicks for $20 a piece, how they would come over for fights, and the guys would fuck her in the bedroom for like $50 while it was a fight on pay-per-view. He would bring her to his construction site, put a mattress in the back of the car, and people would fuck her at lunchtime. This girl was one of those girls that didn't know she was fucking Jenny McCarthy. You know those girls that you look at and you're like, this girl has no idea that if she just went to Starbucks on Sunset, she'd get a developmental deal. She has no idea.
Right.
And I'm watching this shit. So there was two shows on a Friday. After the first show, I go to the bathroom. I see her coming out. And she's like, oh, my God, I had a great time. I go, can I ask you a question? Are all those stories true? And she's like, yes, I love to fuck. And it's how we pay our bills. And I'm like, this is crazy. And she goes, I give a great blowjob. I go, why don't you give me a blowjob? She goes, okay. She sucks my dick. Afterward, I go up to the, you know, she sucks my dick. She goes back to the table with her boyfriend, her husband. I go upstairs, smoke a joint. I go back down when the show starts. When I get back down there, she's hammered. She's sitting at the table with her eye, and she sees me walking in. The feature goes up. I go up. 10 minutes into my act, this bitch yells out, I sucked the comedian's dick, and he came into my mouth, right? It's fucking, it's pandemonium in there. The husband gets up and he's like, you sucked her dick? You sucked his dick? What the fuck is wrong with you? And he's yelling at me on stage going, you owe me $40. You owe me $40. I mean, this guy, I'm calling the police. Call the police. I want my $40. I mean, this went on for 35 fucking minutes on this $40. I ended up giving the bitch nothing. You know me. I'll get out of there scot-free. I gave the bitch an aspirin to go.
What is that? Is that considered shoplifting, what you did?
What, shoplifting? That's considered getting a blowjob and fuck it. Let the pieces fall where they may. Hey, listen, this is the Bert Kreischer today. He's your special guest. I got to get out of here. I got a 2 o'clock, but I love you guys.
Love you, Joey.
I got to pick up kids soon.
All right.
No. Keep it going. You guys.
No. I got to pick up my kids.
What time?
I have 1:30, I think.
It's perfect. It's been an hour, man. It's perfect.
That's perfect. Let me tell you something.
Can we do it again tomorrow?
Yes.
Can we do a Friday afternoon?
We can do this all the time.
Let's do it again tomorrow. Are you busy tomorrow, Duncan?
No.
I got to take the girls to the beach.
What time?
All day. I told them I'd take them to the
beach.
Malibu.
Let's go to Malibu. Let's eat some mushrooms. Let's go to Malibu with Bert and his family.
How does that sound, Bert? We'll bring the podcasting equipment to Malibu.
To Malibu.
I'll bring a gasoline-powered generator. We'll set it up on the
I got them in that
one. I'm around for, I swear to you, I'm around for 21 days.
So we'll do this again.
I will do this.
Let's do this one more. Let's do this next week.
Let's do one on your podcast.
Yeah, let's do one next week.
Let's do that.
All of us.
Let's do that. I'm
All
in
of
that.
Us. Let's
and then
do
let's
it.
Do awesome. Coffee as much as
this
possible.
This is fun, guys. Thank
Beautiful.
You, Duncan.
Thank you so
I love
much,
you
guys.
Thank you for letting me interject in your podcast, brother.
Awesome.
Oh my God. Sit properly. Rao Rao, Hare Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna, Hare Rao, Hare Rao, Rao Rao, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna, Hare Rao, Hare Rao, Rao Rao. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rao, Hare Rao, Rao Rao, Hare Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna, Hare Rao. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rao, Hare Rao, Rao Rao, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna, Hare Rao, Hare Rao, Rao Rao, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna, Hare Rao, Hare Rao, Rao Rao, Hare Krishna.